another episode of Magic the Pro the Ring, the show where Magic the Amateuring decides to go pro and talk to some of the greatest pros in the game.
That's right. Before we get started with today's guest, we need to thank our sponsor, Card Kingdom. Go to cardkingdom.com/MTAcast for all of your singles, boosters, and other sweet magic regalia.
Yeah, you can get everything you want there, including a lifelong friend, maybe. I don't know.
You never know.
You could put that on your order.
Their customer service people are incredibly friendly.
Yeah, you just never know.
It might happen.
CardKingdom.com/MTAcast. We're making their life difficult. But they make yours easy.
Excuse me, I was promised a customer service pen pal. If I don't get that, like, man.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, this show is also brought to you out there who are Patreon supporters, because this is your reward for helping us out and giving us a little bit of money every month to do the show. So we make this show for you. So this is really for you. And we have a super awesome guest this week. I'm really excited because we got this guest just before we could never have this guest again.
That's right. He is about to be sequestered by Wizards of the Coast as a member of R&D.
Yeah, they're going to put him in a little R&D cage and he'll have to design magic cards through the bars.
Yes, exactly. That's for the first year, though, while they make sure that they're, like, getting acclimated.
Oh,
after that, they're given, like, some roaming room.
But they still can't be fed. No, you can't feed them.
No, you can't feed them. Like, don't reach through and, like, try and touch them.
If you haven't guessed already, our guest this week is Andrew Brown. Welcome, Andrew.
Hello.
So Andrew had 2 PT top 8s last season.
Woo!
Yeah. Was a member of Team East West Bowl, which all together had a fantastic season.
Yes, they did.
And as we mentioned, is now leaving for R&D on Monday.
On Monday.
This is Friday.
Monday. Yes. This is Friday.
Congrats. How's the move going? Because you're, like, physically moving.
Yeah. I'm packing my entire life into 1 backpack and 3 suitcases. And
wow.
I'm pretty much done. And my flight leaves tomorrow. And I'm a little nostalgic about leaving my place of birth. But I'm excited about the new adventure that it's going to take me on.
Awesome. Seattle is a really great
city. Yeah, it's awesome.
City.
I love
it's
Seattle.
Super cool.
Are you
it's actually Renton. Renton.
Oh, it's Renton. You're right.
But they're like neighbors that get along.
Good job at selling Renton, Megan. She works for the tourist board there. I'm not sure if you know.
Come to Renton. Good neighbors with Seattle.
We're next to a cool city. That's what it says on the website. Anyway, yeah, it's got to be like a bit of a change going from sunny LA to rainy Seattle. But I like the rain personally. How do you feel, Andrew?
Pretty much indifferent about the weather. Indifferent. There you go.
Wonderful.
You feel that way until you have the designing magic outside challenge. It's where you have to spend a month outdoors designing magic.
I'm not sure that would work, but
yeah, do you know what? Like, I don't design it. It's kind of like Project Runway, but with magic cards.
That would be sweet.
I would watch it.
I would watch that.
All right, moving on.
The R&D cages are inside, okay?
Okay, yes, fair enough.
They're inside, not outside.
I've seen them.
So, Andrew, tell us a little bit about how you got started playing magic.
Middle school, a friend of mine said we should play this game. This was during Onslaught Block, so, you know, bought some packs of that, played really bad decks, and fell away from it, and then came back during Rise of Eldrazi, and then I started playing Limited. Realized I was terrible, like, just terrible at the game, and I was like, you know what, this is such an intellectual, like, pursuit that I can dump myself into, and I did that, and then now we're here, right? Yeah.
Wow.
Fair enough.
You were terrible, and you're like, you know what? I want to not be terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a I realized that the drafting. I started playing Limited, so like every draft I did, it was like a new experience, something new I could learn every single time. So that really appealed to me, and I kept doing it and doing it and learning and learning and learning. And then I realized you had to play Constructed, and I tried that and I loved it. And now we're here. Yeah.
Awesome. So would you say that is Limited your favorite format, or like once you started in on Constructed, you found something that you liked better?
There are more tangible rewards in Constructed. Like, you can pour yourself into it a lot more and see the results immediately. While Limited, it is more of like a more of an intellectual pursuit where you, like, you can learn, but, you know, like, sometimes you don't get the right cards or whatever. There's more variance to it, but I would say that I have more fun playing Limited just because the experience is different every time.
Yeah, I want to go back to when you said I was terrible and then I put my nose to the grindstone so I could become better. What exactly did you do as a player to kind of make yourself become great at the game?
I would just ask questions from people who are better than me, and I would come into it with an open mind. One of my big magic philosophies is that there are no right answers in the game. It's such, like, it's so big, there are so many possibilities that no matter what, somebody could say that something is more correct than the other, and that's totally fine, but, like, coming in with the, you know, notion that something is right or wrong before you ask the question is not a way to improve.
And that's a good point, because I think in Magic, a lot of times people see things as black and white, like, this is the correct pick, that was the wrong play, or whatever, but I think it's more than that.
Yeah, everything's open to interpretation, and, you know, that's where we get the best discussion from, is when we're talking about what we think is a better play, or what we think is a better choice. It's not right or wrong, it's just, it elevates the discussion, and it gets more people talking about it.
So you kind of exploded onto the scene when you had kind of two top eights within a very short span of time. Mm-hmm. What was happening in your life that allowed you to get to that point where you got to the top eight?
Well, the first one, I've only played in 7 Pro Tours up until now.
Top eight, 2 of them. What a record.
Yeah, that's like a good percentage.
Yeah. So, my first Pro Tour, I qualified by GP top 8, and I got 18th place in my first one. So that really set the tone, and I was like, you know what, I know that I can do this, seeing this result, so let me just pour my entire, like, life into this and see how far I can take it, you know? And then, I kept chaining together invites, and eventually at Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch, we played a crazy deck that we didn't think was good, but it just turned out to be sliced bread, so it was pretty easy. That was one of the times when you're just the right dude with the right deck in the right room. But the second PT top 8, that one definitely took a lot of work. It was funny, I had just gotten laid off from my previous job, a month before the PT, and I was sitting with 35 pro points. So I was like, you know, I could, like, try and find a job right now and, like, work on that, or I could try and go 12-4 and get 15 more pro points to make platinum, and then, you know, oh man, I can be platinum pro now, right? So I played Magic for like 7 to 8 hours a day for a month leading up to the Pro Tour, and it worked out, and I was able to live, however shortly it was, that platinum lifestyle.
So you were drinking, like, drinks out of goblets and wearing a cape?
Pretty much.
Yes. I always forget about the platinum cape.
Yeah, the platinum cape.
Yeah. But it's a really nice cape.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The goblet was also platinum.
So we're clear. It had better be.
Obviously. I mean, otherwise, why do they call it platinum? They have to get the name from somewhere.
It was forged with the tears of my defeated opponents.
Oh, excellent. Nice. Excellent.
Nice. All the sweeter.
I'm throwing a Halloween party in a couple days, and you're invited, by the way, Andrew. And I got a goblet. He's like, what? I got a goblet that's like a skull. It's an orange skull head goblet.
You didn't send me a photo of that.
Well, it's downstairs.
All right.
I don't think you're invited, Megan.
No. Yeah, Megan, this is going to get awkward real fast.
Oh, man. Life is, it's been good being friends, but I guess it had to end sometime.
Yeah, rough beats.
Oh, well. So what was it like? What was it like top eighting 2 pro tours, or like, what did it feel like top eighting the first one? Were you, like, elated? Were you nervous? Were you just completely out of your mind?
Oh yeah, I was just the happiest that I've ever been. Like, achieving your goals, something that you set out to and, like, actually work for, and, you know, just, like, pour your life into. It's, like, super gratifying, and, like, I'd watch streams of people top eighting, and it, like, being there, there's no other experience like it. It was amazing. That's it. Amazing.
I want to ask you about when you're practicing 7-8 hours a day, just mm-hmm. grinding and trying to get better. People wonder, how do you survive with that kind of lifestyle? Like, did you have a pot of money saved up? Were you still, like, doing odd jobs on the sides? Were you living off of, like, money that you won playing Magic? How does it work?
Yeah, I lived off my previous job and the earnings that I made playing Magic. And, you know, it was enough to kind of sustain my LA lifestyle for about, I calculated another 2 years. So I would, essentially, I gave myself 2 years to, you know, figure out if I wanted to be a pro Magic player or not. And the answer is kind of no, I guess.
You had an offer Fair you enough. Couldn't refuse.
Yes.
Yeah.
You woke up to find like like a Magic card ripped in half in your bed. Just the top half of it.
Like a horse card. Exactly. The horse head. Oh, it'd be so good.
Oh, man. So I have another question about the 7 to 8 hours a day. Like, is there anything that you would do to kind of keep yourself, like, in the game or, like, feeling sane? Because that's a lot of time. At least, you know, I think about it. It's like, I could not sit down and play for 7 to 8 hours yeah. in a day. I would run outside and yell at the closest stranger. Talk to me.
Well, you know, when you're doing it with your friends and when you're having a good time, it can seem seamless. Like, honestly, like, the best example of this is when you're at a Pro Tour testing house, like, hours just evaporate so fast. Like, 'cause you're having fun, you're learning, and you're with your friends. Like, there's no other combo to make time just disintegrate. And, that was a lot of the time. So, like, normally it's a really bourgeois lifestyle. You know, I would wake up at, like, noon or something, like, stumble around my house, find some food, drink some coffee, play Magic online, like, probably only for a couple hours. And then everybody would get home at, like, probably 6 o'clock from their jobs or their life. Because a lot of people on East West Bowl, like, they have real jobs, they do real things, they have families or whatever. So since the team's so big, like, a lot of people trickle in from, like, 6 till about, like, 2 a.m. or so. So whoever was ready to play, I would just play with them. And, you know, that's how I got my incredible amount of, like, the volume of hours in.
Nice.
So East West Bowl, how did you get involved with them?
So it was really for my second Pro Tour, which is Pro Tour Origins. There were a bunch of people from my area, Southern California, that qualified. So we kind of, like, teamed up together, got a house, and, you know, played it out. And we actually came up with the Thopter deck, which was really cool. And, you know, some people from the East Coast saw that, and they're like, oh, those guys are pretty good. Let's see what they can do in... let's see what happens when we team with them for the next Pro Tour. And then that just happened to be the one, you know, where we won it all. We had 3 people in the top 8. It was insane.
Yeah, that you guys are a force to be reckoned with now.
Yeah, I know. We have a lot of organization. You know, everybody really cares about the game. And they all kind of recognize that, you know, if they do put in the effort, and with the resources that everybody has, like, we can be successful. Like, it kind of goes into, like, throwing down the kind of pseudo old boys club in, like, higher up Magic. 'Cause, like, you know, it's really hard to, like, break into a team like Channel Fireball or Star City Games or whatever. Like, it's really hard to talk to those people and have them, like, come back at you positively. So, you know, in East West Bowl, we were just some dudes who qualified with some friends, and we've tried to keep that image going.
Yeah, I want to know about how that... I'm going to call it the Eldrazi Sky Spawner deck, because to me, that was, like, the card from that deck.
Yeah.
Look at this comment!
that I remember. So I was on coverage for that Pro Tour, and I remember standing there in the feature match area with my little, you know, pad where I'm marking down people's cards in hand, and I was like... What? Like, I did a double take when I saw the Sky Spawner for the first time.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this? But it turned out to be just the absolute correct move. How did you guys find that deck?
Well, honestly, so that was just when Oath of the Gatewatch had come out. So all these new Eldrazi cards with Wingding mana and, like, tons of new stuff, right? So we'd seen those lists online. There was like mono black Eldrazi playing Urborg and like Tomb of Yawgmoth, Urborg and Eye of Ugin, right? And like most of the decks like had those two cards always. But you know, we were thinking, we were like, do we really have to have those two cards in our deck? Like, what if we just take out the Urborg and just play different cards, right? Like, there's so many new cards that we should just explore all of the space that we can instead of like being tethered to these previous decks that have been played. So once we explored into that, we were like, wow, you know, we can just play like Vile Aggregate, Eldrazi Skyspawner, like Ruination Guide, these like commons and uncommons that just like, when they costed two less, they were amazing. So,
well, you know, I can see Eldrazi Skyspawner being really good when you cast it for blue.
Yeah. It was really nice.
And then you have another mana, even.
I get it.
Yeah.
So things are cheaper still.
Yeah.
Yeah, that deck was awesome. It's probably I think it's easily my favorite deck anybody's won a Pro Tour with, for sure.
Yeah, my favorite thing at the end was when JC won the entire event with a luck counter in play. That was awesome.
Yes, he did. And JC, too, is tearing it up meanwhile as well.
Yeah.
Maria's cat climbed up here, and I was like,
yeah, my cat is here.
Yeah, JC and I, we've played for a very long time. Like, we've played on Team Grand Prix, both him and I and our third player, Eugene. We've played on the same team, limited team, for like 4 years now. And, you know, we all kind of started off together. We all wanted to, like, build off each other. And now, like, JC's platinum, Eugene's silver. I was platinum, but... But it was really awesome seeing that we could all just like build off each other and succeed at the thing that we wanted to succeed at.
Absolutely. So we talked about that Eldrazi Skyspawner deck. Do you have like a favorite deck of all time that you've played?
It was the deck that I won Grand Prix Denver with. It was a blue-black control. The slowest deck possible, just counter spells, removal, and the clunkiest finisher around,
which was
Pearl Lake Ancient.
Oh, yeah, right. This deck. That's right.
Yeah,
that big old
cutest card. Yeah, by the way,
that big old you know, lake dragon.
Yeah, sure.
Right, sure.
Sounds up your alley, Megan.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, I really like control decks, and it was just the one I'd done the best with, and you know. In the new era of control is kind of like planeswalker oriented with like permanents and stuff.
Yeah.
But back then where you could play like lockout control, like just stop your opponent from doing anything, that was my jam.
It was a beautiful era of Magic. It was really amazing.
You get to do nothing, I get to have fun and attack you with a 6/7 prowess.
Oh, the 6/7 flash prowess.
Flash prowess, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is a question I like to ask everybody who comes on Magic the Prothering, and it kind of seems like a simple one, but I don't really think that it is. Why are you good at Magic? So some people are terrific mathematicians, like, you know, Frank Karsten. Some people practice and just go all in on playing 10 hours a day like BBD. So what makes you a good Magic player?
I think it's my memory. I don't play like as much as BBD. I like to think about stuff. I like to theorize, but you know, every time that I play a game, and if I make a mistake, I remember that mistake that I made, and I just never do that again.
you're able to remember it after the first time you make the mistake?
Sometimes if it's pretty obvious, yeah. But if it's more invisible, like I might have to talk about it with my teammates about it. We're like, hey, should I do this? Should I do that? What do you think? What do you think's like a better play or whatever? But the way I like to describe it is I throw my brain against a wall and then look at the blood spatter and
oh my
be like,
God.
Okay, all right. Okay, that one? Yeah, that one's not good. All right, don't do that one again.
What imagery?
It's very Dexter.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes.
I love that. Yeah. That nobody said that before. That's great.
Yeah.
And it's so important, right? Like, because it takes me, I've said this before, it takes me three times, potentially more, to making a mistake before I remember not to do it, because I'm a very kind of instinctive player, and I'm not sitting there like churning through decisions necessarily in my brain, but I'm remembering and playing from previous games, like almost muscle memory. So that's something I take to heart and should try to do better myself as a player.
I mean, it's all just kind of repetition. Like, if you make, like, the same kind of mistakes, you can normally kind of, like, realize what trends are happening there and then work to avoid doing those.
So what do you think, like, in return, what do you feel like Magic has taught you or has given to you?
Everything. It's honestly, like, I graduated high school, didn't make it into many colleges. I really hated school. It wasn't for me. And, you know, like playing Magic has really, it got me my first game design job. It's gotten me like so many friends. Like it's literally given me everything in my life up until I was like 18 years old. Like, so I mean, it's everything to me and I owe it so much. And I'm going to make strides to make sure that it continues to give to everybody because it's, everything about it, like the community, the game itself, the opportunities that it provides are just so vast that, and I was just so lucky to be able to touch all of those that, you know, it's Magic has given me everything in my life up until now.
And now you get to kind of go under the hood of Magic,
yeah,
so to speak. I mean, how did you feel when you got that call when they told you you're going to be working in R&D?
It was.
I don't know if you're like meh or if you like don't want to tell me that you ran around your house like naked and screaming.
It was more of an email.
Oh,
so.
Okay. That's true. Who calls anybody anymore?
No, nobody.
When did I last get hired? 10 years ago.
Okay. Yeah, it was I was very happy because it's a really hard decision to like give up playing competitively.
True.
So like. When I got the email, it wasn't like, oh my God, yes. It was like, oh my God, yes, I have a hard decision now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
How are you feeling about the transition about like leaving competitive play and going into making the game?
Well, you know, when my previous game design job, I worked with some of the smartest people that I had met up until that point in my life. And, you know, it was so rewarding to just going to work every day and just be the dumbest person in the room. I know that sounds a little weird, but just being able to constantly learn and like every day I would just get schooled, like both definitions of schooled, like I would learn and I would get like ridiculed at the same time. But but when it's from your friends and from people that like have an interest in making you a better designer, a better thinker, it's just amazing. Like the environment was like nothing else. And you know, after living the platinum lifestyle for like a couple months and it wasn't that, and I wasn't learning, I wasn't improving. I was only improving as like a Magic player, and you know, that wasn't enough for me. So it was really easy to make the decision. Hey, do you want to work with the smartest people that make Magic cards? Yeah, let's go with yes. Yes, I'll do that.
Yeah, sounds pretty good to me.
So what exactly will you be doing working at Wizards?
How much can you tell?
Tell us all the secrets besides designing cards from a cage, which we covered.
Well, yeah.
Right. Well, I believe I will be working, 4 sets in advance. So the next time you can complain directly at me will be in about 9 months.
All right.
So
all right.
Mark your calendars.
All right. I'm doing it right now. Complain. Right,
you can start complaining directly at my Twitter in 9 months.
Okay. Send Andrew an email about Magic.
With a sad face.
With a sad face.
Yeah.
Well, we won't send you angry emails. We'll just send you disappointed ones.
Andrew,
oh, perfect. Weird. Perfect,
yeah. Man, we're really disappointed in you. I'm sure that's not true.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to be great.
So So you're going to live in the future. That's cool. I think they say, you know, I've heard people talk about their first day when they go into Wizards and they kind of get the rundown. They're like, all right, so 2017, we're doing this. 2018 is the Huey Lewis in the News set. 2019, Waffle set, craziness. Yep. And you're just going to be like overwhelmed with all this new stuff coming at you, unless you've already gotten that talk. I don't know.
Well, I already did that like at my previous game design job, so it's I don't think it's going to affect me too much.
I would be just like, my eyes bulging out of my head. So what do you hope to kind of bring to your role in R&D? Like, if what would you be happy to say that you had done by the, like, say the end of 6 months or the end of a year?
I mean, I don't have any particular agenda in terms of, like, what I want to insert into Magic. Like, specifically, I have an overarching, like, thing that I want to kind of slowly introduce. But, like, in terms of, like, short-term goals, nothing really. But, so the game that I worked on previously was a kids' card game. So I learned, it was kind of indoctrinated into me that, like, simplicity is better. And it's kind of awkward because, like, I'm coming from, like, the spikiest background possible, like, you know, like, win, 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 only play to win, whatever. But, you know, me as a designer is more simple. Like, I like to go for more kind of not super difficult to understand, easy to play, easy to understand, and just we play Magic, understand what's happening, and we have a good time.
Do you have a card that is your favorite design from over the years?
Yeah, I really like Sylvan Advocate. That's a card that I really like because, you know, it's really obvious that, oh, hey, this is a card that's pretty good early game. You know, it's got good stats. And then, oh, when it gets to late game, I know that it's powerful. And it's also another card that's like good in most situations. Like it's good early, it's good late. Everybody has fun when they're playing it, unless there are like five on the table, you know.
And then everyone's like, God.
Yeah.
Unless you're a mono white deck playing against it and you're just like, stop playing Sylvan Advocate.
Stop being a 2-3 or a 4-5.
I have to kill it.
It's also a little awkward when both people are playing Sylvan Advocate and they just kind of like bump into each other.
Boop, boop, boop.
Then it's like the race to six lands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it five or six? I don't remember.
Six lands.
Six
lands. It's just like, who's going to get there first?
Probably the person who went first.
Yes, likely, unless it's not.
And you know what? It's not like a flashy card, right? Sylvan Advocate isn't there like, hey, I'm a mythic, I'm a dragon, you pay a wingding and three fingers and your firstborn child, and guess what? You get 20 life and do 3 damage to a random card from a previous game.
That's a really random card you just designed.
Yeah, it is a brutal cost.
Really
3 fingers is not nothing. And 3 damage to a creature from a previous game. Like, it's like, that messes up the rules big time.
You can only ever activate it in your life 3 times. Yeah,
that's true.
You're out of fingers.
I just love that last mechanic I invented so much. 3 damage to a creature in a previous game. Like, oh, sorry, we have to go back and play it.
Well, now you have some things to not introduce on your first day.
You know, again, I don't like saying anything is right or wrong in Magic, and I'm not saying that that's a bad design.
Interesting design.
I'm just saying that I would not consider that.
Okay, that's fair. It's fine.
I wouldn't ever think about
I'm
it.
I'm disappointed in that design.
Sad face. Sad emoji.
Send Maria an email about that disappointing card design. So going back to playing, what if you had to give like one tip to players trying to get better, what would that be?
I guess I already said it, but never go into a conversation or when you're talking to somebody who has similar goals or is who you think is better at Magic. Like, never go into the conversation thinking that something is set in stone. Just like, be extremely open-minded and surround yourself with people who are better, like in terms of playing the game or who share similar goals with you. So like, oh, I want to make the Pro Tour. Okay, well, let me hang out with only people who want to play on the Pro Tour or have been on the Pro Tour.
Awesome. Yeah, that's. I think that's really important, and a lot of pros bring that up. You know, surround yourself with people who are stronger, that you perceive are stronger than you at the game, and that'll kind of level you up just through osmosis, yeah. as it were.
Yeah.
Not literally, but, gross. You know, figuratively. Weird.
So obviously, like we've mentioned, you're going to work at Wizards. Do you, like, where do you see yourself in, like, 5 to 10 years in the game? Like, would you see yourself, like, working at Wizards kind of indefinitely, potentially, you know, for forever and ever?
Yeah.
Or would you see yourself, like, deciding to come back to professional Magic at some point?
For the short term, I think I want to stay there for a while. I think I have a lot to learn there, and, you know, they can really teach me a lot about card game design. I also, you know, I mentioned before, I owe so much to Magic because it's really given me everything in my life that I want to make sure that it succeeds. And, you know, I'm interested in doing coverage. I want to be, like, a color commentator. Like, I want to kind of be the face of, like, R&D, maybe. Like, I don't know. I just want to be associated with Magic, and I want my association to be positive with that. That's
absolutely.
Yeah.
I guess that's.
Why would you? Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I don't know. It's hard for me to really parse it into words, but it's just I want to be associated with Magic in a positive way. I guess that's the
fair end enough. Goal. I want to be associated with Magic in a negative.
I would like to be neutral, chaotic neutral.
Chaotic okay. neutral. Fair enough. I'm chaotic bad.
That's definitely what it's called. So, why would you tell somebody to play Magic who had never played Magic before and was interested in maybe getting involved in the game?
I think it appeals in so many different ways. You know, there's, like, the flavor aspect, there's the intellectual aspect, and there's actually, like, looking at the cards is awesome, and there's also just meeting a bunch of sweet people, like, at your local game store or flying across the world. Like, there are so many ways to enjoy the game of Magic that itself that you can really find the one that appeals to you most.
How about this question that I just thought of?
What?
What do people not know about being a part of the Pro Tour or being on the Pro Tour that would you think that they should know?
It's actually really weird. When you get to the almost Pro Tour level, like the PTQ, RPTQ, like PPTQ level, a lot of that is kind of toxic, I think. Like, some of the players are out to, like, get you, or, like, they're not coming to have fun. They're just coming to kind of win and slay. But, you know, at the Pro Tour, it's such a different experience. Like, there are very few moments where people are, like, mean or malicious. It's just the environment is we're all coming together, like, as a community, and we've all qualified for this event, and it's probably best for us to just have a good time rather than like win, not by, I don't know. What am I trying to say? Angle shoot.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. We're not trying to angle shoot. Yeah. It's great. It's learning. It's fun. It's immersion. It's recognizing that everybody around you is your equal and we're here to have fun and play the game.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's super cool. Do you have any like interesting hobbies?
Magic?
Is that a no?
Great answer.
Like anything outside the realm of Magic that you do that people wouldn't necessarily know about?
Well, you don't really get a lot of time to do stuff like that if you're a pro Magic player. But I mean, I really enjoy cooking. I've been on the ketogenic diet for about three and a half years now. And it's really changed my life, and I haven't gotten off it. And I would recommend it if you haven't done it before and you are looking to become a healthier individual. Because another one of my, like, awesome, not awesome, weird Magic philosophies is that, you know, if everything else is taken care of, like, feel good, have all my stuff in line, I'm not really thinking about anything else, if I can just focus like purely on Magic, then you know, I can be a better player. So one of the funny things I say on Twitter sometimes is like, look nice, play nice, deck's nice, hopefully I draw nice.
Fair enough.
Like, you're not worried about anything else. You're going in clear, you know?
Yeah.
No, that seems pretty sweet. I get
can
it.
Can you give us a keto recipe that we could make easily?
Well, pretty much you only eat meat and vegetables and eggs.
I'm in.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
But you can't. There's no sugar. There's no bread. There's none of that. You can't have any of it.
So if I, like, boil an egg, is that a recipe?
That's technically a recipe, yes. You've done it.
Yes. Is it, like, so... I mean, I was on a similar diet recently, but I only did it for a month. Mm-hmm. But I actually loved it. I felt, like, great when I was on it. But it was so hard, Andrew. It was impossible. Like, I couldn't go and hang out with people. How do you control yourself, like, when you're in a social setting, when they're like, have a drink that's loaded with sugar. Eat this piece of cake or whatever. Like, how do you deal with that?
I say no.
Oh, God. Okay. I just
so
weak.
This is pretty
I'm
dark.
Weak.
Get ready for it. It's dark. But, you know, every time, like, I get offered, like, cake or cookies or whatever, I think to myself, is this short-term happiness really worth the long-term self-loathing that will come in the future? And the answer is normally no. So I just say no.
Yeah. Okay, I'll keep that in mind. Yeah.
And plus, you know, it's actually not as hard as you think. You can drink vodka soda. You can drink Michelob Ultra Light. That's what I do.
Michelob Ultra Light. I could do vodka soda.
Yeah, that's the one of those two.
Yeah, and like, you know, when you go to a restaurant, I will have the lettuce-wrapped burger, please. But I guess you don't live in L.A. where everybody's kind of frou-frou like that.
That's true.
That's true. Everyone in Minnesota eats hot dish.
Yeah.
It's great.
Don't even know what that is, but...
It's a casserole.
It's a casserole. We call it a hot dish. Literally nobody else does.
Nobody else does.
No, you can't have casserole. Sorry.
Okay. No casserole. All right. I figured.
See?
Okay.
Awesome. Well, I really like boiled eggs. So.
Yeah. Just go hard on those.
Man, you guys, seriously.
Go ham on them, because you could also eat ham.
I could also eat ham.
That's a funny joke.
Seriously, I really like hard-boiled eggs.
I like steak, so I think we're halfway there,
we're
Megan.
Set.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for hanging out with us and chatting about your past life, your life that's coming up, and giving us some recipe tips for later on.
Is it kosher for me to have questions for you?
Sure.
Like, yeah.
Wow.
Hit us.
Wow, our first ever, like, reverse interview portion. Go for it.
Whoa.
All right. What are your guys' long-reaching goals in the magic community?
Oh, man.
Great question. Well, I'll go first.
Yeah.
Megan and I are two different people, which is...
Really?
Sometimes I forget. You know, see, that's what I'm talking about.
I'm not sure, but, like, okay.
Sometimes we're one human, sometimes we're... But so we are in actuality, too, which is actually kind of difficult to be two separate people when our show is so much just, like, it's us.
Yeah.
Right? But now we kind of have adopted different roles, at least at this point in time, in the coverage world. So, like, I would be going and doing life totals. Like, I'm going to go and do life totals in Denver. And Megan's going in and is being a writer. And then I did one play-by-play spot, and that was incredible. And it was one of the most fun things I've done in Magic that I can remember. So I guess my long-term goals are twofold. One is that I hope that I can be able to do more play-by-play, just because it was actually incredible to be able to do that. And I hope that our show continues to grow and we continue to reach more people and bring them happiness and just make them smile.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about Magic. It's a fun game. It's something people play to have a great time with their friends. Mm-hmm. And if we can make more people happy about Magic, then that makes me so glad. So that's my two-part goal right there.
Fair enough.
In the game.
Fair enough.
And also to get another giant oversized card one
yes.
day.
Yes. Sure. Yeah, I would say that mine is interesting because I'm finishing up grad school in January. And so I feel like my life is just in a really weird place right now until then, where it's like after January, it's like, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And I started doing text coverage in part to like pay for Magic because honestly, I prefer playing. I've never had like, you know, big aspirations in terms of like coverage. I do text coverage because I love the people that I get to work with on it
and
so
you're
much.
You're a good writer too.
And because I find like writing itself to be really satisfying, but honestly when I'm flying to tournaments, I would prefer to be flying to like to go play stuff and I write to make that happen. So I would say, like, I would like to, once I'm graduated from grad school, I'd like to be playing a little bit more than I am right now.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just to keep making our show, which is, yeah, which I've always thought of in more of, like, the realm of, like, I want our show to be, like, the 40 people's favorite thing.
Yeah.
Not the and it's nice that we have so many listeners, but I love that there's like people who really dig what we're doing.
Yeah.
So to keep filling that niche.
I think making another day two would be on my list of goals for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's that. There you go.
Do you think that one day you will qualify for the Pro Tour?
Jeez.
I'd really have to put in more more hardcore. Like I play a lot of Magic, but I don't play it seriously enough.
Yeah.
I think at this point.
I would say I'm in the same boat where I practice and I enjoy playing and I'd really like to, but I don't, right now I'm nowhere close enough to, I think, giving myself enough opportunities to try. Like I think I've gone to 2 PPTQs in the past year and a half just because, and again, that'll change in January when I graduate because my schedule is so crazy right now. And like I go to like 2 Grand Prix a year. So it's like out of all of that, I don't give myself a big shot. So I'd have to make a big change, I think, in my life.
We would probably, at least for me, I would probably have to stop doing my day job, which is pretty a big part of my life right now. And if I was able to only kind of do, you know, hopefully coverage and also do our show, then I think it might be something that we would say, hey, do you want to actually try and like qualify? And, like, have a team, you know, test and all the rest of it. I don't know if that's something we would do, but that would be the situation.
There'd have to be big changes that would happen in our lives.
Yes. I mean, it would be awesome, obviously, but because Megan and I are both very competitive players, actually, when it comes down to it. Even though we have been a show for new players.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't worry. It's never too late to qualify, though.
Yeah.
Are you calling me old?
It's too late to qualify. Remember, he told you that you didn't look 80.
Oh, that's true.
So, all
right, I got one before more. We started I have one rolling. More question-y thing.
Okay,
it's really right, to test your magic metal. These are magic slang terms that are a little bit off the beaten path.
We're being pop quizzed. Let's hear it.
All right, okay. don't answer all at once. All right.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not.
What is a 187?
A 187. Okay. A 187 is when you have a one lander and then you somehow draw eight lands illegally and then you go back down to 7 and you keep that hand.
Okay. Okay. A 187 is like a hotline number that you dial.
That's 3 numbers.
It's like a 1-800 number, but it's a 187 number that you dial when you're doing really badly and you need to talk to somebody. You dial a 187.
That number would get so used.
I'm disappointed in your answers.
Okay.
Okay. So fair enough.
We're
fair
not
enough.
Right. We're not.
What
right.
is a 187?
A 187 is California's penal code for murder. So a creature that kills a creature when it comes into play is a 187. Like flame tongue.
What? So this is like
flame tongue Kavu, Necrotal, stuff, cards like that. Noxious Gear Hulk. That's a 187.
Wow.
So is this is like California?
No. This is an old school thing.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
All right.
I'll
fair
start
enough.
Saying it. 187.
What is an aristocrat?
Oh, that's a creature that you can sacrifice another creature to get an effect on it. Like Falconwrath Aristocrat.
Perfect.
You can sacrifice things.
Oh, I was going to say it's a creature that's able to tell a really good dirty joke.
Or that.
All right.
It's
all
one
right,
of those two.
Right. What is a Tim?
Oh, this is like a Bob, right? So this is a card named after somebody that it looks like?
What?
Like Bob.
I've never heard of the Tim, though.
No, I mean, I'm just guessing.
That's a solid guess.
Okay. Doug Conrad on his Bob.
A Tim is when you're going to time, but you finish, like, right before time is up.
I went to Tim.
Like, oh, but you didn't go to time.
1 second you left on the clock. Ten.
Well, you're right. It's named after a player, but it is prodigal sorcerer. So any creature that taps to deal one damage is a Tim.
Who is Tim?
I don't know. I've just known that it's called Tim.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough.
All right, Tim, if you're out there, let us know who you
what
are.
What is Tim? The Rock?
This is a deck? Like, the green black deck?
He's the actor who used to be a WWE wrestler.
Oh, it's a prison in San Francisco.
Yeah. Alcatraz. No, it's like green black. It's a green black deck, right?
That's what I would say.
Okay.
That's kind of like, you know,
grindy.
It's a green black rock deck.
Yeah. Grindy is the word I'm looking for.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Yeah, we did it. All right. We're coming up. We're coming on the end. All right. What is a Lucksack?
Someone who's just
lucky.
Freaking lucky.
And it's really annoying how lucky they are.
What a Lucksack.
That's actually the wrong answer.
What?
The right answer is my opponent.
Fair enough.
You know what? There's a local colloquialism here in Minnesota, in our like kind of very tiny little play circle for Lucksack. It's called Lucker Dog.
Oh yeah,
Lucker Dog. That's right.
Is more people say that?
Yeah, dude, we say that all the time.
Okay, great. I love Lucker Dog.
Yeah. Lucker Dog.
It's so dumb.
Mayor of Lucky Town's another good one.
You're so lucky. You're the goddamn mayor.
You're the mayor of Lucky Town.
Mayor, man.
All right. Last one.
Okay.
What is a pile?
A pile is just a horrible
just
deck.
Terrible.
Is
it what you're playing?
I mean, it's what you're playing.
The correct answer is my deck.
Yep. It's what I'm playing.
This is my pile, and that's a lucker
that's
sack.
That's a lucker sack.
I put them together. That sounds terrible. Well, thank you so much for that quiz. That was awesome.
No worries.
That was wonderful. 187.
Yeah.
Now I know.
Yeah.
Now you sound cool in California.
More importantly, I know a California penal code, which, seeing as I consider murdering people in the state of California all the time, you know.
You're going to need it.
Dude, don't do that. I would be more triggered than a prized amalgam.
And on that note, thank you for joining us, Andrew. It's been great.
And good luck in your new role at WotC.
I'm sure I'm never going to see you guys again. Bye.
Yes.
Bye forever.
Goodbye forever. You'll get an email from us in nine months.
Perfect. That'll be during my third trimester, so we'll be good.
Excellent.